This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 50. A recap of all the tips plus more info for August 16, 2008. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 50th. That's right. Yahoo, the 50th photography podcast on photography.ca. So happy we made it this far. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and today is August 16, 2008. As always, I'm recording from Parc La Fontaine, my new current sound studio, and I've actually taken a couple of pictures of it today, so I'm going to post a couple of pics just in case people are curious, but it's such a lovely park, and I figured, now that I've done a bunch of episodes here and it's the 50th, may as well show a few photos. Thinking about what the topic would be for today's podcast was kind of difficult, given that it's 50 and some people expect a lot more from 50. Lower your expectations, people. For this show, I thought we would just kind of recap some of the important tips and things we talked about in the past 50 episodes. I'm going to talk really fast, but I'm going to try and give a lot of the tips that I think are important just in case people are tuning in at episode 50. You just never know when people are going to tune in when you put out podcasts. Some people can tune in a year after we've recorded. Some people listen every week. Love those people. I love you all, actually. Just kidding. I love everyone that listens. So anyway, I just thought I'd recap some tips and stuff like that, the important ones, and hopefully even though, you may have heard them before, maybe I'll talk about them and give a little bit more info, and that'll be useful to those people that have heard them again. As always, I like to thank people for their comments, both on the blog and on the bulletin board. Quite a few recent comments by Landon, Benny, Sandra543, Manamarak, and Claudio Regina on the blog. Thanks so much. I so love the dialogue between people that post on the blog once they've heard the podcast or have questions or comments. And then, of course, on the bulletin board, although we've had quite a few new registrations, the following people I've posted a couple times, and I'd so like to thank them. Destructive Microwave, Ratio, Kathleen, Taffy, Kiddo, Dag, TR Hodes, Megster85, Langdon9720, Richard Annable, Kate Cash, and Ash Muddy. If I've forgotten anyone, I so apologize, and if you want me to mention you, please just send me an email. I think I got everyone, but if I forgot, it's more than my pleasure to add you next time. In terms of comments and suggestions, it's so appreciated. If you ever want to leave any type of comment or question or suggestion or critique or tell me something that I've done bad, maybe something that I've screwed up on, we're all here to learn. And although I know quite a bit about photography, there's a ton that I still don't know. So, if I get educated by making a mistake or if someone wants to educate me, yahoo, I'm all for it. I'm a lifelong learner and I'm never too shy to admit the things that I don't know. And I'd love to know so much more. So, if you want to educate me, please go ahead. Okay, so now let's get right into the tips. And the first tip was watching the background in podcast one. So important to do. So many people photograph without paying attention to what's going on in the background. If it's a portrait, they'll place them in the center of the photograph, pay no attention to what's going on in the back. Could be trash, garbage, distracting people. Just pay attention to what's going on in the background. Pretend the scene is a clock. Look at what's going on at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, all the way till 12 o'clock. Circle around the scene and then frame your scene accordingly. This is a key tip and a simple tip that separates absolute newbies from those that are getting more experience in photography. Watch the background. Depth of field in podcast number two. Also, very important to be aware of. I'm not going to talk about what it is, but ultimately, when you use a large aperture, the depth of field is narrowed. Your background is far more out of focus than your foreground, whereas if you use a small aperture, large number, like f22, f32, then the foreground and the background are going to be sharp. You can achieve a lot of effects by playing with selective focus. In fact, all of photography, we're basically recording a 3D scene and we're turning it into 2D. We're turning it into two dimensions on a picture. We have to use what's available to us, and depth of field is one of the key things that are available to us. And that's why so many people put their cameras on aperture priority, which means you choose the aperture because it's so important, and then the camera will choose the shutter speed. Fill light from podcast number four. So important. Great example. You're out at 12 noon, right? The sun is shining on your head. It's creating these dark circles under your eyes. most newbies, when they think about photographing, they're like, why do I need a flash in bright sunlight? I need a flash for indoors for when it's dark. But outside, you get dark shadows, you use a bit of fill light, it fills in those shadows. You can use a fill light with a reflector, any type of reflector you buy. If you don't want to buy it, just take a big white piece of cardboard, white piece of paper, and find where the light is, and then bounce that light back into the subject's face, whatever it is. Even for like macro photography, things like this, where you're photographing bees and flowers, a little bit of fill light with a reflector is a great thing to do. You can also have your on-camera flash or your portable flash to use as fill light also. Very, very important. Exposure from podcast number 6. So important to learn about basic exposure. At the end of the day, all the camera does is take an average reading of all the tones in the scene and then feeds you back that average. It doesn't know what it's looking at. It just feeds you back an average. Be aware of that. Be aware that bright things will trick your camera and dark things will trick your camera. If those are the predominant tones in the scene, be aware of it. Painting with light in podcast number 8. That was a really creative one, and I really enjoy doing it. And basically what a lot of people do is they'll go out at night with a flashlight, and in my case, a laser light worked best. You know, those red little pointer lasers that a professor would use on a blackboard, or cat owners will use to to give their cats and their dogs some exercise. Just throw it all around. Anyway, I use that to trace out a figure in the darkness. And it's such a great thing to do. You can use flashlights. You can use laser lights. You can use anything that gives light and paint the scene with light. At the end of the day, photography is about light. If there's no light, there's no image. It's just black. You need light. So if you're in a dark situation and you outline something, you can achieve a really cool effect. Framing, so important. We want to frame our subjects with elements in the scene, and that adds dynamism. So if someone is standing underneath the tree, include a branch that might be framing them or surrounding them, and that will add depth and interest to the scene. If you go to podcast number 10, you could see a picture that I included where I used a bag as a frame for a cat. For my sweet Zachy, God rest his soul, he passed last year. Such a sweet cat. Anyway, he was in the bag, and it was perfect. I used the bag as a frame. You can use someone's shoulder. Let's say there's two people in the scene. One person is 10 feet in front of the other person. Well, I mean, you can take a picture of the foreground person. You could take a picture of the back of their head and shoulder, and then you can place, you know, by you moving, and catch the picture in the background. So you're even using a body part as a frame. Great way to make your photography more creative. Archways, windows, great, excellent framing tools, and they really add interest to your scene. Intentional blur from podcast number 16. You know, once you're aware of the rules of photography, feel absolutely free to break them. Some photographs are incredible. I mean, we always, at the beginning, we want our photographs to be sharp, and we tell people the photographs have to be sharp. But once you already know that the photographs have to be sharp, be prepared to play. Don't start playing at the beginning. You know, some people do that. You know, they don't know the rules and they start playing. And yeah, okay, it might work the occasional time, but it's all guesswork. Once you know the basics, then play. A blurry portrait is perfectly acceptable in some situations when it works. I can't tell you when it's going to work or when it's not going to work, but sometimes it'll just work. So be creative. If the background is fairly neutral, you can have a nice effect with a blurry background. I did a self-portrait, I'll put a link in the show notes, where I'm totally blurry. And you know what? I think that photograph works. There was fog outside, and you feel all the fog in that photograph, and it just works. Don't be afraid to play once you know the rules. Filters and polarizers from podcast number 18. So important. Modern cameras, modern digital cameras, they blow out the sky all the time, you know. Things are always clipped, meaning there's no information in the highlights. And polarizers and neutral grad filters, those can bring down the sky in particular in your scene so that, you know, if you're photographing a landscape, the sky isn't all blown out. I mean, if you're photographing a landscape, the sky is one of the key parts of that image. If the sky is blown out without detail, I gotta say, the photograph is crap. The sky has to be nice if you're shooting a landscape. It just does. And filters and or polarizing filters will really help with that. In podcast number 20, we talked about digital in-camera filters, speaking about filters. And there are filters built in to many modern DSLR cameras. You just have to go to your menu and find them. Not all brands are going to have them. Not all models are going to have them. But very often, you can have red filters, yellow filters that are built in. Sure, they're digital, but they still work and they give really interesting effects. So I definitely recommend that you check them out. Patterns, leading lines, and the rule of thirds. 3 podcasts all about composition. Podcast number 21, 22, and 23, respectively. Patterns. Patterns are so interesting to your eye. they really make dynamic photographs. It doesn't have, the pattern could be the focal point of the scene. You don't have to shoot anything. Just shoot an interesting pattern. And very often, it's so interesting. It can be anything. A pattern can be anything. In the podcast, I took some mailboxes. So, you know, it could be a fence. Take a picture of a fence. A fence has a repeating pattern. Anything with a repeating pattern often makes a great photograph. Leading lines. Lines and curves. Again, at the end of the day, we're creating a 2D representation of a 3D image, and having lines and curves. Curves are better than lines. Curves trump lines more often than not, in my opinion. So get leading lines. If you're taking a picture of a woman, let's say it's a sensual portrait, her curves are part of what is going to make that photograph interesting. And be aware of that. You know, if you're taking a picture of a road, a winding road is interesting. Anything with lines and curves is often interesting. Rule of thirds, this is a key. Before we learn anything about photography, we place our principal subject right in the center of the frame. Bad idea, not dynamic. Not as interesting as placing people on one of the lines of the rule of thirds. And in a nutshell, you take your scene, you divide it into three equal parts like a tic-tac-toe board. That central square, avoid it. But the corners of that square, place the objects of interest, be they still lives, be they live models, place them on one of those four corners or on one of the lines of the thirds. Go to podcast number 23 and you'll see a graph. Shutter speeds, slow and fast, another key way. We have a limited amount of ways in which to turn that 3D scene into a great 2D image. Shutter speeds are a great way, especially when our subjects are moving. If you have moving water, if you have a bike racer, if you have a marching band, whatever it is, you can control the effect by using a fast shutter speed, which will freeze the action, or a slow shutter speed, which will blur the action a little bit. We've all seen this with a waterfall. Take a picture of a waterfall at a half second or 1 second, and the water will blur into a beautiful, beautiful formation. In terms of holding the camera, you need to be aware of this. If you're taking a picture of a live person, do not shoot at less than 1/60th of a second. Why? Two reasons, but primarily because the subject you're taking, even if your camera is on a tripod, that subject normally cannot stay stiller than 1/60th of a second. He'll just start to sway and move, and your camera will capture it. And if you want ultimate sharp photos, 1/60th or over. The rule of thumb for long lenses, you know, sometimes you have a long lens too. So this is the camera aspect of it. And if you have a 50mm lens, you shoot at 1/50th of a second, minimum. If you have a 100mm lens, 1 over 100, minimum. Or 1 over 125, minimum. A long lens like a 70 to 200 zoom, you're going to want to shoot at 1 over 200. That's the rule of thumb, and I personally tend to go a little bit faster. So if I was using a 200mm lens, I would certainly not shoot at slower than 1 over 300 or 1 over 350. And these are the sweet kids in the background. Very nice. Came to play in the middle of my podcast. Woohoo! Keeping this in, it's all good. Okay, using shadows creatively from podcast number 6. I mean, yes, sometimes we want to fill in the shadows, and sometimes we want to make the shadows part of the image. Let's say it's a sunset, you're walking down the street, and you have these long shadows created by the sun. Those shadows are cool. You may want to include them in the picture. So, you know, be aware of shadows and how they can be used creatively and interestingly. Wide-angle lenses from podcast number 27. Wide-angle lenses are amazing. They're so creative, and you can usually use them very creatively in almost any situation if you just think about it. You have to know if you're shooting a person and you're too close, it will distort their head and face. As things approach that lens, they will distort. Be aware of it, and be aware that you can use that effect creatively. Depth of field when you're using wide-angle lenses is usually increased. So usually we say, you know, f2.8, f4, f5.6, that's going to blur the background. It's going to blur the background less when you're using a wide-angle lens. Be aware of that. One of the creative ways to use it is take a picture of something really, really close. So you'll have, let's say, a rock, a tree, a person in the foreground, and you're in a tight space. So you can really get everything that's around them, make the foreground object look really large, and that's a really interesting way to get some good photographs. Posing models from podcast number 28. A good friend of mine and fellow photographer, Dominic Vizzotto, gives great tips on how to pose people. One of the key ones is, you know, heavier people don't want to look heavy. Lately, we're all a bit heavier. You know, don't photograph people straight on if you want to make them look slimmer. Pose them by turning them to their side, 45 degrees, 90 degrees. That will slim them down. Play with that if your goal is to slim down people. Using reflectors to add fill light, again, it's so important. Podcast number 30 is totally directed to it. You can use reflectors to fill portraits, you know, from window light. Have someone stand near the window, use a reflector and bounce that light back into their face. Their eyes will pop. Trust me, great thing to do, especially if you're just learning. Don't fuss with the lights at the beginning. Learn about the camera and learn about using natural light. Use the reflector as a secondary or supplementary light source, and that's how we learn. Add the flash and the lights later. Learn basic photography first. Studio setups for beginners. I mean, once you've learned that, then yeah, of course. Let's go and learn about using external lights or off-camera lights. Alien Bees make some great studio flashes that are inexpensive, portable flashes for your flash. You know, the ones you just attach to the hot shoe of the camera. Those are great light sources. Take them off camera. Buy a sync cord, take them off camera, and watch your photography improve exponentially. Macro photography on the cheap. We did one of those too. Using extension tubes or close-up lenses, we can take pictures of very small objects. You know, often people want to take insects or flowers. We don't necessarily have hundreds or sometimes thousands of dollars for the best dedicated macro lenses. You could just add these filters and or tubes to existing lenses and really get some great effects on the cheap. It'll take more time, it won't be as easy, but you won't have to spend a lot of money and you'll still be able to get great shots. One Light Portraits from Podcast 38, very nice thing to do, very good way to get started. You want to see the effects of one light before you start adding multiple lights when you are learning. One light will create very harsh shadows and very often we'll want to fill it, but not always. If we want to take a dramatic portrait, one light is amazing. The one light can come from the window. The one light can come from a flash source, from a flash head, a studio strobe. It can come from a continuous light source, and it will create some shadows depending on how hard or soft that light is. If that light is direct, let's say it's a floodlight to the right of the person, shining on the person, that's going to create some harsh shadows, very dramatic portrait. If you bounce that floodlight into an umbrella or off the wall, it's still going to create shadows, but they'll be softer, and it'll still be an interesting portrait. Try it out. Low light photography. We talked about that in podcast number 40. You want to use a large aperture because there's not so much light. Big hole, large aperture, small number. So f2.8, f2, f4, all good for low light photography. You want to forget about the shadows normally in low light photography, and you want to concentrate on the midtones and the highlights. Histograms, as I mentioned 10 or 15 minutes ago, you know, especially with digital cameras, we have a tendency to blow out the highlights. We're losing dynamic range in our digital cameras. As screwy as that sounds, our film cameras of 10 years ago had a greater range when you were using film, negative film, so black and white or color negative. These days with digital cameras, the dynamic range is less. We're trying to fool the camera with gadgets to increase dynamic range, but for now, your average DSLR has a lower dynamic range, which means it can record less tones than similar film cameras of 10 years back, or even, you know, film cameras now, but very few people are buying them. Anyway, a histogram represents all the tones that are in that scene. And to get the best print or the best result, you want to have as many tones as possible in your scene. By looking at a histogram, which is just a graph, you have the right side of the graph and the left side of the graph. The right side represents the highlights, the left side the shadows. You want the histogram to cover as much of that zone as possible. Not always. It's not always possible. Don't always go for it. But you want to try. And if the graph touches the right side, then those highlights are clipped. Clipped means they're washed out. You want to pull back a bit. You don't want the histogram to touch the right side. You want it so darn close, but it shouldn't touch. You can deliberately underexpose it in order to get that effect. Your rights as a photographer, you know, if you enter contests and things like this in podcast number 42, we talked about that. We've talked about that a lot on the bulletin board as well. You really want to be aware of your rights, and you have more than you think you do. You know, no one's allowed to take your film. Nobody. You know, if a cop asks you to take your film, you don't have to give it to him unless he's got a warrant. I'm not a lawyer, but just be aware of this and look at the rights of photographers in your particular country. We did another podcast on posing models. When you pose a model, look at the model, you know, and ask them, especially if it's a shoot for them, what don't they like about their own face or their own body? And you, as the photographer, should try and diminish what they don't like. if you can. It's not always possible, but often it is possible. So if they feel they look heavy, turn them away from the camera. Shoot them a bit from a higher angle if they have a triple chin. If they have no hair, don't shoot them from the higher angle because you'll get more head. You know, basically, talk to the model. Find out what they like and what they don't like about themselves. Try and accommodate them. In terms of the actual shoot, use music. You want to make the model feel comfortable. You want to talk to them. And just try and make them feel as comfortable as you can. This all takes practice. This all takes time. But eventually, you get used to it as you do it more and more, and you'll find the photographs will come more easily. Simple backlighting outdoors. I did this podcast recently also. You know, if you set your flash to -2, meaning the flash is giving you 2 stops less ambient light. So if you have a flash meter and you take a meter reading of the scene and you set your portable flash or your on-camera flash 2 stops less, that gives a very, very pleasing effect. Try it out. You can use it without flash too, just backlight without flash and see what you get. Typically, you'll get a very, very nice halo around the body of the person depending on how direct or how large or small and how close or far the light source is from them, but the light source will be coming from behind them. Highlights and distractions from podcast number 6. It's so important. We've talked about them in about 3 tips. We've touched upon them, and there is some overlap. I know. Highlights and distractions are very important. You want them under control. You can underexpose to get rid of them if you need to. So if you're looking at a sky, you can underexpose the whole scene by a little bit and pull out the shadows. It won't always work depending on how much light there is, or you might get noise in the shadows, but try it out. You're only going to know once you try it with your own camera. Some are more sensitive, some are less sensitive, but you can try underexposing to see what you get. At the end of the day, once you have it on your print or you're using it in a graphics program, GIMP, Photoshop, whatever, you can burn in the highlights, make them darker selectively. And during the scene also, you can reposition yourself. If there's a really big highlight somewhere, try repositioning yourself if possible. Not always possible, but sometimes it is. Photographing babies from podcast number 48, soft light. You want to use soft light, reflectors. You want to try avoid using flash if possible because it may distract the baby, might make baby cry, might frighten the baby depending on the age. But basically soft, soft light. Soft, soft light is a great way to start. Holy moly, all that brought us to number 49, our podcast before this where we talked about selective dodging and burning. Ansel Adams called the print the performance. And if you want the best performance from your image, you must selectively dodge and burn. You just must do it. Once in a while, you'll have a photograph that's perfect, that does not need selective dodging and burning. To be honest, I'm not convinced I've ever had one, and I've been doing this for a while. There's almost always a way to selectively dodge or burn, make something darker or lighter in your photograph, and that's going to make it sing. Again, you want to have as many tones as possible represented. So some tones in the photograph are going to be too dark, some are going to be too light. It all depends on what you want to achieve, what your subject matter is. There's no way I can say, oh, you have to burn grass, you have to burn flowers. No, it depends on how they represent in your image. If they're too dark, you can dodge them. If they're too light, you burn them in. That's just what you got to do if you want a great print. And holy banana, that has brought us now to this current podcast, number 50, where we recapped it all. I have so many more ideas for the next bunch of podcasts, but as always, I prefer doing suggestions. I prefer listeners writing in. I prefer listeners contacting me by email, photography.ca@gmail.com. I prefer they go to the forum on photography.ca. Just make your way to the forums. It's free. It's absolutely free to join, and you can post questions, post your own images for critiques, or you could post podcast suggestions. And of course, you could just go to the blog. Really, the blog is a vehicle for the podcasts. Once in a while, I'll post images as well, but the vast majority of everything posted on the blog is related to podcasts. So of course, you can comment on the podcasts themselves within the blog, photography.ca/blog. It's so appreciated. It keeps the community growing. It grows the community. Yahoo! If you want to help me grow this community too, I'd really love it if more people that like the podcast go to iTunes and review the podcast. If you didn't like it, I guess review it negatively. But if you really did like it, a great way just to show appreciation is to go and review the podcast. You may have to sign up. It may take a few minutes, but it's so appreciated. And it is a great way, you know, just to say thanks. We do this for nothing. I don't want money for this, anything like that. All I really want to do is grow the audience, just have more people listening, more people contributing, more people sharing and exchanging. I learn, newbies learn, advanced amateurs learn, and pros. We keep learning by sharing our information and repeating it over and over and over. If you're on the bulletin board and you see a post that you like, you can use one of the social networks like Dig or StumbleUpon. You can click any of the links under the posts, and that also helps more and more people find the podcast. And that's really my goal, just to find more people to listen and contribute. So if you're looking for a way to say thanks, and many of you have thanked already, and thank you so much. It's so appreciated. Any single time I get an email that shows, you know, some thanks or gives a critique or comment, I'm pleased. I'm so happy about it. So even though it's a small gesture, it's so appreciated. So if you continue to review or dig stuff or stumble stuff or, you know, or review it in iTunes, that's really the granddaddy, because most people find the podcast through iTunes. It's so appreciated. Thank you very much. I'll stop now. So thanks so much, everyone, for listening. It's been such a treat doing this with you. I think it's been like almost a year and a half or 2 years. There's no way on God's green earth I'm stopping. I love to do it. I love you guys and girls. Thanks so much. So as always, before we end off, I like to encourage people to get out there, take shots. It doesn't matter what type of day it is. Rain is good. Snow is good. Rain's not good for recording so much, but it's great for taking photographs. Everything's good. Just get out there, get creative, get on your back, shoot up a tree, get on a post, shoot down at something interesting. Doesn't matter what you do. Just get out there and keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone.